This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you are at all familiar with the Bible, you probably know the story that Mary, mother of Jesus, conceived her son miraculously, immaculately, without a human partner. This is one of the core beliefs in Christianity, and while it may be a miracle from a theological perspective, there's also a scientific term for this phenomenon. It's called parthenogenesis, and it's actually been found to occur among some fish, birds, snakes, and lizards. And now, on that list, crocodiles. A recent discovery found that a female crocodile living in isolation in a Costa Rican zoo laid eggs, one of which turned out to contain a stillborn baby crocodile. Joining us now to talk about this discovery is one of the scientists who helped study the crocodile eggs. Mark Davis is a conservation biologist at the Illinois Natural History Survey, part of the Prairie Research Institute at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Mark, welcome to the 21st Show.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you for having me.
Listeners, you are also welcome to join our conversation today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, let's just start off by telling us a little bit more about how this discovery came about.
Well, this all dates back to 2018, different world then, and I think it speaks to the benefits of serendipity and collegiality. Got a random phone call in the morning from an old friend and colleague, Gordon Schuett, in New Mexico, that said, hey, I got a phone call about this crocodile in Costa Rica, and she's been in isolation for well over a decade, and last week she started building a nest. And today there are eggs, and they're wondering what might be happening here. Assuming these eggs develop and are viable, or do you have any interest in doing any genetic analyses to determine if this is one of a couple of options, the first being the one you mentioned, parthenogenesis, or this other weird thing many reptiles do, which is long-term sperm storage? And, you know, being the herpetological weirdo that I am, I said, of course, yeah, let's do that. And so we waited for a period of time on the eggs. And then our world kind of blew up with COVID, and we had issues getting the samples from Costa Rica into the country because it is a protected species. But lo and behold, 5 years later, here we are talking about this pretty remarkable and unprecedented finding.
All right, so maybe we should back up. And just for those of us who haven't had biology since high school, what would you normally expect from a female crocodile in captivity for more than a decade in terms of egg laying? Would they lay any eggs? Would they just not be eggs? Or would they just be sort of empty eggs? Or how does that work?
It is most usually the former. They just don't lay any eggs. They don't engage in any reproductive behaviors. Crocodiles are, like many reptiles and that many people don't recognize, are a very social animal. And there's a lot of social aspects and networking that go into reproduction and rote behaviors that they engage in and interactions with one another. And when isolated from those sorts of stimulating mechanisms, it's very unusual for any sorts of nest-building, egg-laying, reproductive activities to occur whatsoever. And so the fact that after, you know, many years after reaching reproductive maturity, this female would begin constructing a nest and then laying eggs was remarkable and highly unusual.
So this has been, I mentioned before in the introduction, this has been seen in fish, birds, snakes, lizards. What are the commonalities there? I guess I mean birds are birds. Reptiles. How do we think about this?
They are absolutely. So we often refer to birds as avian reptiles, and all the rest as non-avian reptiles. And so you know you have these similar branches off the grand tree of life, of which birds, reptiles, crocodiles are close branches to one another. And we've seen it pop up in these fairly specific branches of the tree, as you mentioned, birds, reptiles, and fishes. Crocodiles and turtles, they're different branches and unique branches of that grand tree of life. And they have a little bit different, a couple common ancestors there that kind of drag them all back to the dinosaurs, really. And you know, that's really the distinction. And there's also another really unusual facet to crocodiles and turtles in particular, in that their sex is not determined by chromosomes, but instead is by the temperature at which those eggs are incubated at. And again, This has never been documented in a crocodilian, certainly, and it's never been documented in a species that exhibits that sort of sex determination. And so a doubly unusual finding.
So I think a lot of our, well, some of our listeners of a certain age maybe are going to be recalling the plot of the book and movie Jurassic Park, right? Which involved, and you've seen this in some of the news stories covering this, where they supposedly on this island bred all female dinosaurs so that they couldn't reproduce. And lo and behold, as Jeff Goldblum memorably says, life finds a way. So what is actually happening here?
Well, I would say that your Goldblum impression is far better than mine. but yes, and I think it really reinforces that philosophy that it indeed does. These instances of parthenogenesis, like this crocodile, like many of these others that you alluded to earlier, we're observing these in captive collections, right, where these individuals have been brought in to zoos, to breeding colonies, or other situations in which they are in isolation from other individuals of their species. And the drive for an organism to increase what we call Darwinian fitness, that is your contribution, your genetic contribution to the next generation, is incredibly strong. And it promotes these sorts of phenomena occurring where that it's encoded in the genome, that drive to propagate and to spread your genes into the next generation is so strong that it can lead to these sorts of phenomenon where without engaging in typical reproductive activities, you are still able to at sometimes produce viable offspring. There are entire species of whiptail lizards in the desert southwest that only propagate via parthenogenesis, and it's driven speciation in that complex. And so indeed, life does find a way.
What species cannot have parthenogenesis? I mean, is this at all possible in mammals, or is there something about us that makes that impossible?
You know, as long as I've been in my career, I think that I would argue that nothing is impossible in biology. I suspect that there is the potential for parthenogenesis to occur in mammals. It's a very difficult thing to observe, right? And so that's where the challenge lies, is that these instances that have been confirmed have largely been the product of being able to actively observe individuals in isolation that then give birth or lay a clutch of eggs. And we now have the genomic tools to strongly confirm that. Is it happening in the wild? Possibly, probably. Certainly with some species, we know it is. Could it be occurring in mammals? Well, if you look back through that tree of life and our evolutionary tree, we indeed do share common ancestors deep back in evolutionary time or geological time with the crocodiles, with the birds, with the fishes. And so if indeed it is something that is baked into our genome, I wouldn't say that it's impossible. I wouldn't disqualify any organism.
Yeah, we're all cousins if you go far enough back on
exactly.
The family tree. Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Mark Davis, who's a conservation biologist at the Illinois Natural History Survey, part of the Prairie Research Institute at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation about a recently published finding of parthenogenesis in crocodiles. A female crocodile living in isolation in a Costa Rican zoo laid eggs, one of which turned out to contain a stillborn baby crocodile. You mentioned tools or new tools. Could the work you did here have been possible 20, 30 years ago? Talk about the genetic advancements that made this understanding possible.
We are firmly entrenched in the modern genomics era, and the tools that we have at our disposal blow even my mind, and I've been doing this job for a little bit. Going back, not too far back, I got my PhD in 2012, but the tools we had at our disposal then could begin to crack in and give us some answers, or at least be able to draw some decent inferences with these sorts of phenomenon. But we now have the capacity to look at genome scale data with thousands upon thousands of bits of the genetic code to compare. And we now have the tools, the computational tools, right here on campus at the U of I, to analyze data in ways that we couldn't in the past. We are training students with bioinformatics toolboxes that are unparalleled. One of our co-authors wrote a specific program to analyze these sorts of data to uncover these kinds of findings. And 10 years ago, they really weren't at our fingertips, and certainly not 20 years ago. So the genetic tools to begin to answer these questions were in place, but the expansion of the past decade has allowed us to be unequivocal and undeniable in this finding. And we might not have been 10, 15, 20 years ago.
You know, I'm increasingly, we have about 5 minutes remaining in our conversation, and every time I have one of these scientific conversations, it seems like every story is also a climate story in a way. Is there a climate change aspect to this phenomenon?
I think there is. Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of harkens back to a comment I made earlier. You know, I think a lot about conservation and keeping biodiversity around for future generations. And one of the challenges that we're running into with crocodiles and turtles, as their sex is determined by the temperature at which their eggs are incubated, we're beginning to see some disturbing findings that sex ratios are beginning to become increasingly skewed in many of these populations because of warming temperatures. And
did you say, does warmer mean male or female, or does it vary? Or
you're going to have to come and take my herpetology course. it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Okay,
some
okay.
species, you have that sort of trade-off. Others, there's a bell-shaped curve. It varies by species.
Okay.
But nevertheless, we are seeing shifts in sex ratios. And you think to the extreme, can we envision a scenario? Is there a non-zero chance of a scenario where we have a population of crocodiles in which there are nothing but female members in the next 100, 200, 500 years? There's a non-zero possibility. Does this capacity for parthenogenesis then confer them some ability, some advantage to hang on and to perhaps extend their evolutionary trajectory into the future? I think so. I would like to see us as a world come together and do a better job of sort of managing these issues so that we don't have to be taken to that extreme. But it is absolutely a possibility and a concerning one at that.
You know, I began this segment with a sort of anecdote about the Christian story of the birth of Jesus, the Immaculate Conception, as it's known. I think that's one of the first things I thought of, and I guess that's because of my own background, being raised and educated in mostly Catholic schools. What do you think about that parallel?
Well, as a lapsed Catholic, it is hard not to draw that parallel, and there are a lot of similarities there. It's been a while since I've leafed through Revelations. I don't think that the second coming was a crocodile to judge the living and the dead. Nevertheless, there are certainly those parallels there. As a scientist, my one quibble is, and I'll be pedantic for a moment, is that crocodiles don't give birth. They hatch eggs, and that would be the big difference. But it is certainly analogous in that this was a virgin birth. And a pretty remarkable finding, just as the birth of Christ was remarkable.
Mark Davis is a conservation biologist with the Illinois Natural History Survey. Mark, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing this fascinating research with us on the 21st Show.
Thank you, Brian. My pleasure.
And that is all the time we have for our show today and this week. Before we go, I do want to make a pitch for joining our texting group. We put questions to listeners. We hear interesting things. It does inform our coverage. You might have heard our program on trans healthcare for minors that was informed. A lot of our questions were informed by your questions. You can join that by sending the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. That's TALK, 217-803-0730. You can also find the way to do that on our website, which is 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also find our email address, our voicemail line, our social media accounts, all the ways to keep in touch with us. You can also share past segments if you found something interesting and wanted to share it with a friend. We appreciate that. You can find links to our podcast. We're also on Apple and Spotify. Just search for The 21st. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson, and technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again on Monday.